Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the War Report. And today, the War Report is being hosted by Luciana Santon. Dr. Miller has agreed to listen in today and to be a guest caller on the show and to simply kind of guide us through some of our agenda, and he has been gracious in allowing me to host this hour. And along with me here today are Michael Elliott and Sarah Tepper Blaine, and we're going to be discussing The Other Park, which is a documentary that Michael has recently produced along with help from many other wonderful parent activists and parent activist groups around New Jersey and other areas in the North, and he's going to fill us in a little bit more on that. So welcome, listeners. Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. Thank you for joining us today. And I'll start out with a brief introduction about Michael. Michael, hello. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you, Luciana?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining me on my solo run with my first hosting of the War Report. It's a very special day to have you with me. Thank you.
That's great. I can't wait.
Well, Michael, first of all, you are and film editor, and you're also a parent, and you're also an education activist. And if you could please just tell me a little bit more about you and your work and how your media work has combined with your activism and your parenting as a brief introduction, I would appreciate that. And then we'll move on to Sarah.
Well, yeah, I've been a film editor in advertising and feature film work and documentaries for 25 years now. And about a year and a half ago, I got started trying to help out with messaging for education activism because my wife had actually asked me to go see Diane Ravitch speak on her book tour at a local place in Brooklyn. So I went to see her, and she started up in her speech about, you know, talking about the book, and I just found myself very drawn in by the narrative that she was telling about how she came about writing it. And I just found myself at a certain point in time, and later in her talk, you know, that was very well structured and timed, but, you know, she ended up having me on my feet applauding, and it was a very spontaneous moment. She had the whole hall on their feet. And it had been a long time since that had happened to me, you know, where somebody connected with an issue so intensely and that it covered the political world in such a kind of universal way, which is that the fight with that we're having for saving public education is much the same fight that goes on in a lot of other areas politically and in the country and in the world. So the forces that are unleashed on education are very similar. So it really resonated with me, and I jumped up and kind of ran up to the podium because she was signing books. And at first I talked to her son, Michael, and I just asked him, like, so who's making a film about you? And he said, well, people shoot and ask questions, but it's not really anything, you know, nothing's really happening. And I just got very interested in her. And in meeting her son, Michael, I went to a meeting of a group that he had organized in Brooklyn called Parent Voices New York, and that is really, I made a film for them to affect the choice that Mayor de Blasio, the mayor-elect of de Blasio at the time, had. He was about to choose a new school chancellor, and I offered it to make them a film to try to affect that outcome, and that's really what got me started in it. But I've been in advertising and in that kind of media for many, many years, and I've watched it work and flow, and it's a knowledge that I have that I've never actually used for anything other than selling, you know, things to people that they don't really want. And I was always looking for a way to use it, to use those tools in ways that are more socially conscious and more in line with my own political views. And the education issues, because I have fourth graders, and last year they were in third grade, because they were in the testing grades, it was just a very, you know, a confluence of those, of both those interests.
Right. Well, thank you so much for putting your media savvy know-how together with your parenting and your political beliefs and your willingness to help people speak out and get this message across. I'm just so grateful as a public school teacher myself and as a parent and as an activist in Tennessee. Thank you so much.
And there are a lot of voices to be heard, so.
Yes, lots of voices to be heard. So anyone that we have to help us with that, is that's my mission as well, and part of War Report's mission as well. And so thank you. I'm going to move over to Sarah now. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us on the War Report. And Sarah, you are a parent of two public school students in New Jersey, a practicing attorney, and you also blog in your free time regarding public education and at parentingthecore.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct, yes.
Excellent. And you are in the documentary, correct?
That is also correct.
And can you please give me a little bit of information about your background and maybe how you've connected with Michael and some of the other local groups that are involved in this particular battle against public education where you are?
Sure. I'm in a town called Montclair, New Jersey, where we feel like we're very much on the front lines of the efforts to extend corporate-style education reform to a suburban school district. We have a lot of well-known figures in the education reform movement in town, as well as a lot of well-known figures who oppose the education reform movement in town. And a group of those people came together who oppose corporate-style education reform to create a group called Montclair Cares About Schools. I came to this separately. I knew what the work that Montclair Cares About Schools was doing, and very much appreciated it, and they've done a great deal to educate me about what's happening to our schools. And I started blogging because I just had a lot of questions. I saw the changes in my daughter's curriculum as Common Core came in. I started to look at the park and look at the test questions and was very concerned about what I saw coming for my child. And then after that, I ended up in the film because a member of the Montclair Cares About Schools group that was instrumental in putting the film together reached out to me and asked me to be interviewed by Michael. So that's how I met Michael and connected with Michael.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for all of the work that you're doing on behalf of not only your own children, but everyone else as well, and especially with the Montclair group. And can you speak a little bit more about their involvement, Michael?
Yeah, they came to. I actually had approached them through another source that was because I was looking for some research relative to social media and messaging, and I was actually trying to put together some focus groups, and this was when I was doing the work in Brooklyn for Change the Stakes, and we spoke about, you know, about some kind of work together, and it was unclear at the time because they really hadn't experienced the kind of testing regimen that in New Jersey yet that we was really ramped up very heavily in New York City, and we stayed in contact. This was last spring, and we stayed in contact over the summer, and as the park approached, and they started to see what was being put upon them, and they were, you know, also very conscious of the changes that were happening inside the schools with curriculum and what was happening with their kids. They decided to go ahead and let me make a film about them and about their problem, about their issues out there. And that was this again is that same group, which is that Montclair Cares About Schools. And they are a formidable, formidable group of parents. They, I think that what they've done is very brave, because they have, they've really, you know, kind of poked a stick in the eye of the opposition in a way that I don't really ever think that they ever expected to be jabbed like that. And they've taken on a, you know, quite a lot in the context of that. When you make films like this, you never know how far they'll go. You don't know, you know, if they've got any kind of real reach at all. They can end up as an organizing tool that are, is used at you know, PTA and at school meetings, and that kind of rallies the support of groups locally. Or it can end up becoming a bit of a viral messaging, and which is, I think, that's what's happened to this film. And it just brings a lot more attention to bear on all the parties. And it's complicated because it's very unpredictable what happens. It has implications for the dynamics of all the people that live in that town and that work within that group. And then it brings a lot of scrutiny to bear on them from the opposition. And I think that all of those things are very, very, they make it, you know, as if life isn't complicated enough, and dealing with your kids in school isn't complicated enough,
right.
You know, and living isn't complicated enough, especially when you're living and you're advocating. I think it just brings a much more stressful layer on top of that. And they were very, very brave to take this on. They were reticent at first, initially when we spoke about it, and I think that part of that reticence was not really knowing the full. You know, kind of experiencing the full throttle of the park as the instrument of reform, but they really bit off a big piece to take on, and they have done
right.
So. And
Michael,
they brought some great people.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about the other park, would you please tell us a little bit about the title and what that stands for? And then we actually have a guest caller that is waiting on the line. Another person that you have interviewed for the film. Melissa Katz, I believe, is waiting to come in. So if you could just tell me a little bit about the film. And go ahead.
Well, the other park, the title was generated really by the group themselves. We were fishing around for a title as I was cutting it, as I was putting it together. And we, you know, it was titling these things is always a bit of a struggle because it's, you know, in a very short order, you have to sum up the kind of what the content is. And I think that the other park is what is not represented by, it's the position that's not represented by the brochure and by what's sold to the public in the context of that. And I think that the other park is really the real park. The real park being a very, very hard instrument that's used with children in school and dominates the education landscape and the dialogue and has implications for the teachers and for the kids and for the parents and families kind of across the board. So,
Michael, what exactly does it stand for, the other park, PARCC?
Well, you're going to ask me for the acronym, and I'm going to pass that to Sarah because I'm much less I can't really go
That's
down that.
That's fine.
I'm not going to tell you what it is.
I'll just stumble on it.
But I can tell you what the other park means is it's the park that's not expressed by the media blitz that is selling it.
Sure.
Right,
park
exactly.
Park stands for Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers. So that's what the acronym stands for.
Yep.
Okay. And why is it so vital that we listen to the other park? And I would like to go ahead and bring Melissa Katz in with us now as our guest caller, and maybe she can talk to us a little bit about that as well and intro herself and why she has participated in the documentary. Melissa,
Hi,
are you with
thank
us?
You. Yes,
Melissa
thank
Katz,
you.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you.
Yes, and I apologize for my voice. I'm a little sick, so I do sound a little nasally. I'm a student at the College of New Jersey in New Jersey. I'm an urban education major, and I was approached about joining the film, you know, from Montclair Cares About Schools, the same group that, you know, has been discussed right now. And I really wanted to take the opportunity to kind of voice the ideas and thoughts of the student perspective and also the perspective of someone who's a future teacher, and how all of this is going to impact me, again, also as a future parent one day. And I just think it's kind of what Michael said. It's this that we want to give voice to what is not being expressed in the media and what you're not going to hear from the Department of Education, because they have the power to really sell whatever they want, because they're considered the trusted source by the public. You know, oh, they're the Department of Ed for sure. They're the, you know, the ones who are going to know what's going on in education. But really, they can sell whatever story they want, and it's important to hear the voices of us parents and students and teachers and know what is really going on in our schools and with testing and the stuff that you're not going to hear in the mass media.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And as a student in college right now, studying to be a teacher, what's the difference between the traditional program and some of the things that you're seeing or you're having to go through right now? And how did that influence your decision to become publicly vocal and participate in the documentary?
Yeah, one of the things that I'm seeing the most is that I'm working in a field placement. It's only once a week because I'm a sophomore, so it's not full student teaching yet. But in the school that I'm working in, our entire schedule is being juggled around, and our placement is being impacted because park testing is happening. So park testing is even influencing my experience in trying to, you know, work in schools and learn to be a teacher. And I've spoken to advisors at school, and they've said that finding field placements in the spring is so difficult because of all the testing that's happening, because school really does shut down for March and May. It's all testing. And even when the students aren't testing, there's not really any education happening in the other time. You know, they'll watch a movie, do a fun activity. So seeing how that's impacting even my learning in trying to be the best teacher I can be one day, I just feel like I'm being trained to be a test administrator and not really, you know, a teacher who cares about genuine learning and exploration and finding the individuality in my students. So that was really kind of the thing that got me interested in being a part of this film and voicing another voice to what is going on in public education.
Thank you so much for that valuable perspective. And I am a teacher in Tennessee, and I know exactly what you mean when you say that it's hard to find placement and that it's difficult and that schools shut down for the annual testing. So your voice is so vital because we don't get to hear your perspective that often. And especially when you were saying that the media can cover whatever they want because they're bought and sold, you're absolutely correct. And, of course, we can bring in, you know, Pearson for always earning, as I like to say, rather than always learning, because they really have a monopoly on that, especially within the student teaching. Here in Tennessee, Pearson basically runs our education programs. I don't know if you guys are experiencing that. Are you?
Yes, very much so. And if I can add one more thing, I would love to just say that what I love about this film is that even though it's New Jersey parents and activists, it's so applicable to anywhere across the country. And it's a shared struggle that we're all going through in education in all different ways, K-12. It's really just genuine voices of not just our issues with PARC, but what are the issues around high-stakes standardized testing? How is it impacting learning? And it's such a beautiful film in that it captures the voices of parents in New Jersey that can really be understood across the country.
Exactly. You are so spot on with that.
I had a lot of empathy. I'm going to jump in there for a second because I had a lot of empathy for what was going on out there because, I told the folks the same story last spring, which is that for us, you know, for my third graders, the school year ended on March 15th because March 15th was when test prep started, and they had 2 weeks of test prep. Then they had a week, which was the test, and then they had a week of spring break. And then they came back and had 2 more weeks of test prep and then another week of the math test. And then that's, you know, it was 7 weeks later, and it was mid-May. And the school year was all the momentum, everything that they were doing, all the projects, all the work, all the excitement, all the enthusiasm ended. And the misery set in, which was the misery of that's shared in the film that, you know, that as parents we all experience, which is that I don't want to go to school. It's like, and the, you know, we're in it right now, which is it just started up again. You know, we're going along at a great clip. My kids loved what was going on. They loved what was happening. And all of a sudden, boom, here we go again. And it's for the school year to end in mid-March is really kind of unbelievable.
Definitely is, Michael. And I can tell you as a teacher myself that it's very hard to teach in a valuable way. It's very difficult to make sure that we get all of our curriculum and all of the things that we feel our students need completed because the testing is, of course, taking precedent because of No Child Left Behind and the things that we have signed on to, especially the Common Core State Standards. And I know that you guys are, of course, familiar with all of that as well. And really and truly, Michael, your documentary does something so amazing, and I haven't seen it done in this way before. Your documentary touches on the emotional core versus, say, the common core. And I think that is why your documentary is having such tremendous success, is because everyone, as Melissa said, across the nation can relate to it, not only teachers, parents, and association people that work with the teachers' associations, but also the student teachers, students themselves, and, of course, taxpayers in general. And, Sarah, would you like to speak with us just a little bit about your perspective? You are a lawyer, and you're a parent, and I am incredibly intrigued with how that fits into your activism. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, for the most part, I've been very fortunate. The law firm I work for right now has been incredibly supportive of the activism work I've done, which is just terrific. But for me, my activism has been very much based on my experience as a parent and seeing what's changed. Where my legal skills come in is I look at a lot of what gets, you know, put out there and gets circulated, and, you know, I do find that I have to think a lot of the times about what do I want to say professionally versus personally? And, you know, to try to be careful, like I can't go off and give people legal advice or anything like that.
Right.
But it's been very helpful in terms of advocacy and also just calling things like I see them and being able to read things with that perspective of, you know, what's true, what's not, what's really getting, you know, what's really getting accomplished, and also just thinking about how to advocate at the different levels, right? That we see locally, you know, here in Montclair, we see so much happening with our local school board and our local budget and everything that happens here locally. I look at the state level and what's happening at the state level in terms of there's a lot of advocacy to pass bills that recognize, for instance, a parent's right to opt out or refuse the tests, that recognize are trying to slow down the high-stakes consequences of the PARC because it is a new and unproven test. And so getting involved in advocacy at that level, and then also, of course, at the federal level, I think we all need to be incredibly involved in advocacy around the proposed reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. And so one piece that I do find that I have the ability to do is to help the general public to understand where our advocacy should be targeted and why we need to be targeting all three levels at the same time.
And why do we specifically need to be targeting those three levels? And what is your perspective professionally on that?
It's just that we need to take action to be involved in terms of of making sure that we are contacting our senators, we're contacting our congresspeople, you know, we're telling our representatives what we as parents want to see for public education, you know, trying to get the message out there and to tell stories and to get media involvement and to put real pressure from the grassroots level on so that legislation that affects our children isn't being made by Pearson and by those who believe that testing should drive schools rather than testing be a tool employed by teachers who use it in their professional judgment.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And what you said, what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's sort of a three-tiered plan of attack here. We have to definitely be actively involved in legislating and lobbying and speaking with our legislators and our representatives, making sure that we're doing that, and also hitting on the grassroots level, speaking to schools, parents, anyone that will listen from that, and then also working to get our message out through the media, such as the Utter Park.
I think all of those things are absolutely correct, and that's what I've been doing, is really trying to hit all of those levels and to hit all the levels of government, right, of local government, state government, and federal government, because each of them is implicated right now in determining what kinds of schools we all want for our kids.
Exactly, and that's what we're doing today. We are hitting it out of the park or knocking it out of the park and making sure that we do have a voice in this and that we all can be heard. And all of you are so invaluable. We have a teacher's perspective today, student-teacher perspective. We have two parent perspectives. We've got media. And one of the things, of course, that we struggle with as a grassroots, as grassroots media and grassroots groups, is how do we get the mainstream media to become involved directly in our grassroots media. And Sarah, I believe you were recently on television. I believe, you know, Michael's an editor, and Melissa, I believe maybe you've recently been on television or have been interviewed in various locations. Can you please explain to me how we can continue to get that message out to the mainstream media? Sarah and Melissa, if you can help me with that. Sarah first.
Sure. I think the biggest thing is to just keep advocating and to keep writing and to keep letting our voices be heard. For instance, I was very fortunate to be interviewed by the CBS Evening News about a week and a half ago, I think it aired. And that came about because, just kind of happenstance, the superintendent of the school district where I grew up in New Jersey wrote an op-ed piece saying that the parental refusal movement against the park was going to be the end of public education as we know it, and that was a dangerous movement. And so I wrote a response to that. That response ran in the Washington Post, and that's how CBS found me and called me. So a lot of it is about just continuing to do the work we do, and that's how we're getting our voices out.
And also the fact that you are an attorney, that you are a very well-respected professional individual, and that you know exactly what you're talking about, has got to be very scary for the opposite side or the opposite team, I would imagine. Have you had any blowback from that?
I've certainly gotten a lot of, you know, I've gotten some nasty comments on various, you know, blog responses and this and that and whatever. I've been fortunate to avoid some of that myself, but I have seen a lot of nasty attacks against people with whom I tend to agree in, you know, substantial part here in town locally. And, you know, I think that in many ways this really does feel like, you know, war is a strong word, but it's definitely a battle that we're fighting here. When our state commissioner of education issued a memo back last October that attempted to squash the parental refusal movement before it could get off the ground, you know, my response to that is I wrote a blog piece that was called This Means War. And
right,
that's really how we need to get the word out. And, you know, we need to make people understand that this is the time. This is when the policy is getting made. And if we're not out there fighting for positive change now, we're going to be stuck with these policies for another generation of kids.
You're exactly correct. Thank you so much. Melissa, would you like to add something to that, please?
Yeah, I think it's really the core of this is, excuse me, is not necessarily trying to change the mass media, but it's almost like creating our own media. You know, we have such, especially in New Jersey, we have such a strong blogging and writing presence in New Jersey. And through those independent media outlets, we've been able to really get the message out and get the truth out and get statistics out there that, you know, maybe some of the higher-ups are trying to hide. And we can really put out there our voice through those independent sources. And then a lot of times, other media will pick them up. You know, Valerie Strock publishing so many of Sarah's amazing pieces, but it's her independent writing and then being taken to, you know, a mass media output. And it's really about us controlling the message, because the message right. can get construed very, very easily in other ways. You know, we see that a lot with the reporting around the, you know, the quote-unquote 95% issue of needing to, you know, meet the 95% mark on testing. But if we are the ones doing the writing and we are the ones doing the reporting, we control the message and we control the truth. And that way we make sure that we're getting our message out in the best way possible.
Excellent. You just hit the nail on the head with something that we've been saying here on the War Report. Dr. Miller says this all the time, and we are the media. We have to be our own media. And in April, I will be, along with Dr. Miller, at the NPE conference in Chicago, and we'll be speaking about these very issues, opting out and how to be the voice that we need for our particular movement, because it is a war, and that war is grounded in money, and that war is grounded in creating, I believe, you know, maybe you said some class conflict, and we have a lot at stake. We have our children at stake, and we have our public schools at stake, and we've got to do everything in our power to make sure that we stand up for our children, because at the end of the day, really what it's all about is doing the right thing for the right reasons and doing no harm. And I cannot be a part of a movement that harms my profession and my children and my students. I refuse to do that. And we are seeing that becoming a giant wave across the country. And all of us are networking and connecting, and I know that that has to scare people intensely. And I know that other teachers are afraid, people are afraid to speak out, but really what else are you going to do? You can be a sheep, or you can be a lone wolf, or you can network together and stand for something and take action. And all of you on the show today are definitely standing up and taking action and knocking it out of the park.
I think there's another
think
thing that happens. Go ahead.
I was just going to quickly add that I think that's something that's so powerful about this film, is that so many of the voices are parents. So we're seeing, you know, such a huge restriction on teacher voice and future teacher voice, even me, myself, not even employed yet, and students, you know, getting threatened for speaking out in all different ways. But parents have nothing to lose. Parents are going to fight for their kids with whatever it takes, whatever they know and feel is best for their kids. And this film really captures that overall parent voice, and we've seen so much of that, you know, explosion of parent activism in New Jersey. That's really such a beautiful thing to see, because now we're seeing that partnership among parents and teachers and students, and there's nothing that can break down that coalition, because that is really the group that is at the core of public education, are the parents and the teachers and the students. And this film captures all of those voices, but really elevates the voices of the parents.
Thank you so much. Michael, were you wanting to add to that?
What I was going to say is that, you know, we're living in this is a very new media age, you know, with the rise of social media, and even from an advertising perspective, you know, that people haven't really figured out how to harness the power. I mean, we see it in fits and starts, but, you know, I heard it said a lot of times that the corporate education reform, you know, rules the media, But the loyal opposition here, in terms of us, all of us who are pushing back, really owns social media. And from an advertising perspective, what you're seeing happen in the messaging industry is a real shift in power from traditional media sources into social media. And I think that you know, we're fortunate, because the whole advocacy group has really harnessed the power of that, using blogs and Facebook and Twitter and you know, a variety of other methods to message when they're ignored by the traditional media sources that are owned by the very people that we're in combat with. So what happens is that it's a very strange chemistry, which is that I think that we get attention by traditional media by making news ourselves. And we make news ourselves by the way that we utilize social media as the messaging bullhorn for getting our voices heard. And so, you know, it's a real transformation in the way that media works, and it's not ironed out yet. This is all, it's so new and so, and so untested in so many ways that even traditional media will work in opposition to their kind of their corporate sources, because they're out chasing the story. And we get attention from the traditional media when we become the story. And we use social media to do that. And, you know, the blogs and Twitter and, I mean, this, you know, there are so many tools that are available to us as activists to get our voices out there. And there are so many of us in relation to our opposition. They're corporations, they're well-funded, they have staff that that PR and manage this stuff, but we are legion in terms of our numbers. And when that starts spilling over into social media, the whole landscape changes, and the power, the balance of power really shifts. And we're just beginning to really harness that and exploit it, and in ways that are new and very interesting and powerful. And I think that, you know, everybody that's on the call here, you know, I think that Melissa is experiencing this, that Sarah's experiencing this, and that the people who are listening to your show are very definitely experiencing this kind of transformation of the media landscape. And, you know, the film is just one, you know, it's like that's just one little shot that we fire out there, but we, if we use it as a tool to learn, we can see the power of our voices when we all put them together.
You're absolutely correct, Michael. And your perspective is so valuable as someone that has been in the media industry for so long. And it's just amazing to have all of this come together in this way. Sarah, do you have anything to add about the media and how we can utilize that or be our own media?
I really think these guys have done such a great job of putting that across. I feel like I'm learning so much now just listening to them, because I hadn't put it all together the way that Michael did. I think he's absolutely correct, and the best thing I think we can do is continue to use our voices in all these non-traditional ways, and that is how we are becoming the news and making news.
Right, and speaking of becoming news and making news, Michael, how many views does the film have, and how many different blogs and other forms of social media are currently carrying your film? Do you have any statistics for us?
Yeah, the film's on over 150 websites. And,
wow.
And it's the reach is worldwide, which is that as I'm looking at the analytics on it, this film is run around the globe several times, and it's concentrated in various places in the U.S. But we've targeted all week long. We've been targeting the Park states and the SBA states. So what I do is I'm sitting there watching analytics every night, and I see what's coming in from the different states. And if I'm not seeing views and seeing page loads from those states, I'll just start messaging into the groups. And I'm just playing around with different ways to use Twitter to message and to get people's attention. And I think that Melissa saw something today that was pretty, that was a really spontaneous, inspiration I had, which is just that I attached a quote from the different people that are in the film. I attached one of their quotes to their image and started messaging it out into, I was trying to get a big, broad reach, so I really kind of hit all the different states that are especially applicable. But I've, been trying to do this all over, and the support has just been unbelievable. I mean, people really carry that message, and they push it through, which is that you see people, because they relate to the folks in Montclair and all the surrounding areas, because they each spoke so eloquently and had such strong points of view to share and were able to articulate it. I think that, what happens is that people, that they're speaking in those universal ways, which is that we're all seeing what's happening to our kids. We're all seeing what's happening to our teachers. We're all seeing what's happening to our curriculums and our schools. We're all witness to this event. And we're using social media in ways that that are available to us because, what are you supposed to do with it? If you can't, who are you going to go shout it to that you're, mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore? And I think that, unfortunately, you know, I shot an hour of interview with 25 different people that that Montclair, you know, Cares About Schools folks brought in, and I had 25 hours worth of material, and there's some unbelievable material in there, really deep, heartfelt shares that people brought. Even from, you know, Melissa and Sarah, each have stories in there that I simply, you know, I couldn't do justice in the time frame that people will, you know, that people are willing to tolerate in all the areas that we needed to hit with the film. So, but those messages are out there, and, you know, hopefully over the over a period of time, I'll be able to kind of, you know, move those individual stories out a little bit. I have to be careful because people are, you know, people share so much of their lives in that moment, and you want to be also, you know, always be respectful of that. But I think that, you know, therein lies the power, which is that if we tell our story and we use those traditional elements in a non-traditional way, and then we message it out there and promote it in ways that connect with everyone, I think that there's safety in numbers. And we can, if we bring enough of ourselves together, they cannot, there's nothing that they can do with us because we're just too big for them. And no matter how much money they've got.
Go ahead.
This is Sarah. I think we're seeing that very much here in New Jersey, that the social media has been such a powerful force, but it's been just the tip of the iceberg. And what we're really seeing is, you know, we've had our first week of park testing, despite a couple of snow days. You know, Mother Nature seems to be expressing her displeasure with testing.
right.
But we are we're seeing so many more refusals than I ever would have imagined. You know, I heard just at my daughter's school that, you know, of a school of about 500 students, we're hearing, you know, 100 or more refusals. So
that's unbelievable.
That's nothing compared to our high schools. We're hearing nobody's taking the test. You know, that we're hearing, you know, the vast majority of the junior class refuse to test. You know, I'm just walking around my little neighborhood here, pretty much almost with maybe one or two exceptions, almost every single child who's in a testing grade in my neighborhood has refused to be tested. You know, their parents have refused to allow them to be tested. And that's the real power, is so many people even who aren't involved in the media, in the social media, they're getting the message and they're understanding, and even if they're not out there being the activist voices, they're voting with their feet by refusing to allow their kids to be tested. And that has been extraordinary to see.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a moment. We are on a little bit of a time limit here, and we've got about 10 or 12 minutes left, and I would like for us to bring in another caller. We have Tanasia Brown on the line, and she is a student who is not only in the documentary but is also refusing the test. And she's been on before. Tanasia, hello. Are you with us?
Hi.
Hi, Tanasia. How are you?
I'm fine.
Thank you for calling in today. Can you tell us just a little bit about how you met up with Michael and some of these other individuals and the role that you are playing as a high school student and your particular advocacy with the New York Student Union and the other part? Tanasia?
I think that... Hello?
Yes. We've got you.
Hello? Okay. I'm not completely sure. Well, I remember that people were looking for, from Montclair Cares, they were looking for students who could be in this documentary. And I think that Okai Korsi sent me onto the email, and that's how I got in contact with Montclair Cares. And then I went over to Christine's house to shoot the video with Michael. And then ever since then, you know, we've been in contact, and I think the video was a huge success, the film, and I enjoyed working with them on it.
And from a student perspective, what has this film done for you and your advocacy as a student? And can you tell us, just give us a really brief bio and your background so that our listeners know a little bit about you, Tanasia?
I'm Tanasia Brown. I'm the Secretary of North Students Union. I'm a junior in high school in North New Jersey, and I'm also the secretary. I've been in North Students Union for 2 years, and we work around issues of social justice and educational justice. We were created for the students by the students. that's basically it. And from a student perspective, I think that the park is very detrimental to education because it takes about 2 months away from educational and instructional time. And the film has helped a lot with getting more people to opt out, allowing more parents to understand how other parents feel about it, and just to let them know that it's not just a North movement, but it's a New Jersey movement, and it's just a world, a countrywide movement.
Definitely, it is a national movement. You are exactly right about that. And not only national, but it's going to become an international movement as well. We have lots of the same issues going on globally, not only in the United States, but in England. And, of course, we've got the testing regime in China. We have, everyone knows, everyone that's been keeping up with the testing in China knows about those things as well. So thank you for your perspective. It is so great to have a teacher, a parent, a filmmaker, lawyer, student teacher, college student all on today. I thank all of you so much for your time and your energy and all of your own personal finances that you're putting into this fight. And thank you for coming on the War Report today and discussing these issues. And, of course, we here at the War Report are doing everything we can to back all of you, to back Opt Out. I know that we have people under fire all the time. The Opt Out movement, Peggy Robertson, she's under fire as we speak. We've got to have her back and support her. We've got to have each other's back in this. And one of the things that I see as a teacher and as a local association president is that often we are taken away from the focus of our mission by infighting. And that is something that we cannot allow. And something that I'm very passionate about is all of us working together and coming together and networking and keeping our focus so that we cannot be distracted or derailed, because this is war. And I think that all of you probably have a similar perspective on that. And if not, maybe you can share a little bit of insight in the few minutes that we have left regarding that. Melissa, can you give us a little bit of insight from the student perspective, college student perspective? Melissa, are you still with us?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes. We've been going in and out here, so no, you're fine.
I think the most important part in regards to that, as far as being a college student and a future teacher, is that so much of it is in our hands to take the reins on this and say, this is not what we see as the future of our profession. We're going into this to be teachers, not to be test administrators. And we need to band together and fight for our profession and not be afraid to voice our opinions on this, despite what our schools of ed may say. And really just create the vision of what we see as education in the classroom. So we are the future teachers, and we have to band together. You know, so we, you know, even I say students, parents, and teachers, but also in there are the student teachers, are the future teachers, because we're the ones in transition, but we're the next generation of teachers. So it's so important for us to really be the voice of what we see being the teaching profession coming up, and not being test administrators and not being a park administrator as my job.
Right, exactly. You are so right. And if we don't have future teachers like you, then we're not going to have the public education that we have now. And it is so vital that we have passionate young educators coming into the field, and not just Teach for America temporaries, and not just individuals that are coming into this for the wrong reasons or as a resume builder. So you are, hats off to you. Thank you so much for being the voice of future educators and for sticking to your guns and for bringing those voices together. I really appreciate it so much as a current teacher. And one thing that I do want to say with some of the time that we have remaining today, and I wanted to ask you, Melissa, and also Tanasia, how can films like Michael's help you in bringing more student involvement and raising more student awareness and getting your individual messages out and helping us in the war against public education? What has this film done? Because it's very powerful.
I think what it's done, if I can jump in and then Tanasia can also join in, is it's kind of say that, like, we want students to know that this is their education. And they have a right to education. They have a right to learn. And this, you know, refusing the test is one way that they as students can take back the power and say, this is not what I envision as my education. And I'm going to refuse to take the test, you know, with obviously you have to get the parents involved. But it's a way to take ownership of their education. And Michael and I talked about this so much when we met on our interview day. And by refusing the data, you're starving the data beast. And, you know, many people have said that, but you're not giving them the data. And then they can't label the system as failing and that whole rhetoric. But students are really taking ownership of their education by saying, I'm not being a part of this test. And this film gives voice and gives a perspective of, look, other people are doing it too.
Right, other people are doing it too. And we have had the Network for Public Education, Diane Ravitch's group, Anthony Cody's group, they have recently issued a statement supporting everyone in conjunction with opting out and making sure that that message is broadcast to her network as well. And so I think that with all of us on Full Throttle and all of us having each other's back and supporting each other with the opting out and the starving of the data beast, as you so eloquently said, then we can definitely put a damper on that. And we're seeing that because they're scrambling and they're pushing back. And whenever they start to scramble and push back, then we know that we're making some headway. And that's my personal belief. Listen, and Michael,
I want to toss something over to Tanisha because, you know, I have to say that I'm stealing their tools, which is that, you know, the New York Students Union has been very effective in using social media to message and to gather, bring attention to their group and to their cause. And we've seen some kind of pretty spectacular events that they have been able to kind of self-publish through those means that, you know, would have been pretty much ignored or would have been much, much harder to make real and make, you know, live in people in the world. And, you know, as a parent, you know, I'm always looking at my kids, wondering, it's like, okay, what are you doing and what are you up to? Because you're kind of the savvy group in terms of growing up with this technology and growing up in this kind of new media universe. So I just want to say that you know, Tanisha and her group are very, very sophisticated in their use of social media. And I think that that Sarah and Melissa are as well, because they're doing it in a written way in terms of the way they utilize their blogs and the reach that those blogs have is, you know, for somebody as young as Melissa is, the reach of her blog is pretty spectacular. And Sarah has, you know, such a strong audience and following. And as you kind of shepherd a film across the country and you start looking for bloggers to post it on their site and people who have websites, you're looking for people like you guys. And you become the network for how media is consumed and how it's viewed and how its message gets out. And, you know, people like Tanisha are content providers. They are creating events and generating content that then gets spread out by the networks that Melissa and Sarah have. I'm mimicking Tanisha and her group. I'm watching them do the things that they do, and I'm thinking to myself, it's like, how can I utilize some of the same tools that they're using to help message into the networks that put the message out? So you're seeing a whole new media landscape there, and Tanisha's really a big part of that. So I want
right.
to know, so
Tanisha,
you guys should talk
Thank
about
you.
That.
I'm going to have to break in. We've got 1 minute left, and we're going to have to get off the clock. So I wanted to thank all of you for calling in today and for being on the show, being guests, and hopefully you will join us again on the War Report. I want to thank all of our listeners and the War Report on Public Education by Dr. James Evans Miller, Jr. is something that I hope is also another iron in the fire to help us wage war against what's going on and to help all of you. So radio is very important as well. So thank you for being on the show, and thank you, listeners. And we will have a podcast out soon, and we are a weekly show now. So join us again on the War Report in another week to discuss the Machiavellian agenda and the war on public education. So I'm going to say goodbye to all of you. And if there's any last thing that you would like to say, we need to do so now. We've got about 30 seconds.
Thank you so much for having me.
I just want to say thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for putting this out there.
Thank you so much. And join us again next week on the War Report for Public Education. And Doug, if you'll take us out, please.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.